Impress your friends, amaze your coworkers, make your family proud. Here's what you need to know. I'm gonna tell you
what you need to know. Fourth quarter of the program begins right now. Strong here on a Tuesday. We're going to talk some NFL football, talk some Chiefs football, really, with Seth Kaiser. Great film analysis you get from Seth. If you check out his great work, The Chief in the North newsletter is where you can find that. He'll join us in our next segment. We give you what you need to know right now, brought to you by Jungle Law. Did you know that Jungle Law can help you out? If you're experiencing a rumble in the jungle, call the lawman at Jungle Law. If you have a criminal charge pending, call them right away. Jungle Law also handles employment-related issues, even against corporations. Call Jungle Law for a free consultation, 833-4JUNGLE. That's 833-4JUNGLE. Find them online at junglelaw.com. Let's start with the Chiefs news, signing Danny Shelton. Defensive tackle, 6'2", 345 out of Washington, former first-round pick, number 12 overall back in the day. I'm scrolling. I'm trying to see where he ranks. And was he hurt last year? 13 games, no starts. Half a sack. I was trying to see where he ranked in the PFF grades, but I'm not finding him.
Been a few places.
He has bounced around
a few
places.
Team number five.
Yeah, big nose tackle type guy. So different, a little bit of different looks or insurance for Derek Nnadi. That's what Danny Shelton will bring to the equation. So Chiefs make a move and add some depth along the defensive line. Today, many of the coaches talking. We're going to hear from them here in a minute. We'll start with we're going to hear from them right now, as a matter of fact. We'll start with Matt Nagy, who looks to be the liaison, the hands-on guy with Patrick Mahomes this year. He is the quarterback coach, and he's got a fancy title beyond quarterback coach.
Yeah, I'll look for it. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and then so I should probably mention that. But Todd Lebo asking Matt Nagy today how Patrick Mahomes has grown as a player since he last saw him when he was with the Chiefs on his first stint.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, it is so neat to see his growth of where he's at and what he's done. So number one, he's been through 4 years of a lot of wins, a lot of, you know, whether it's the Pro Bowl, Super Bowl, that Super Bowl MVP, four Pro Bowls, et cetera, a lot of wins. When you walk into that room for the first time and you see him in a meeting room and he's sitting there having four different conversations, three of them are football and one's off to the side on something else, you see his growth, his leadership. When he's out here on the football field, it's just wild to see what type of leader he is. He's rare. And, you know, in that time that I had, a couple months after I got fired, I was able to read a book called Relentless. And it talks about, you know, being great leaders and being somebody that can just be great in the moment. And he has so much confidence, and when he walks in the room, results occur because of that confidence every day in practice. That's rare. You don't come across that very much. And he makes me a better coach because of that. He makes his teammates better players, and it's just special.
Matt, just did you ever talk to Patrick about his count to 10 in Chicago that night? Did that ever come up between you guys?
No comment.
I love that. I mean, we all know the confidence and the, you know, it's you know, he's got, we've talked about it before, that Michael Jordan going to find a reason to motivate himself, like how he thinks he was questioned or wronged. And that was one of the great ones, counting to 10, 10th overall pick when, you know, playing against the guy who was the first quarterback taken that year at number two. You know, a motivator and a leader. You know, I love hearing the talk about the leader. You know, I asked, I was talking with somebody. I don't think it was on the air, so I'm not going to say who it was. But I was talking to somebody. I said, hey, you know, like it always, I hear all these people like, oh, well, you know, this guy, you'll take care of it. You'll take care. You know, it was always this guy's name. He was going to handle it. And this guy's going to do it. I said, you ever like sit back and go, hey, how about somebody else grab an oar and row? And he said to me, he goes, no, I think that's leadership, right? They're looking to you, and you give them leadership. And I think that's Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so far, this franchise has looked to him for so many things. And every time he's – I think he's answered every time except for the second half against the Bengals. And even then, he didn't quit. It wasn't like, you know, well, where the hell is he? He was out there. He just didn't play well. But even against the Bucs, I think he played well against the Bucs in the Super Bowl. He was remarkable in that. He didn't have a great second half against the Bengals. That's the only time. Because even when he was supposedly struggling to start last year, in reality, his guys were dropping the ball. Did he make a couple of bad plays? For him, was it his worst stretch of football? Probably was. But it wasn't near as bad as it looked. Guys like Tyreek Hill and even Travis Kelce, both of them had, you know, Tyreek Hill had double-digit drops last year. You know, Travis Kelce always seems to have a couple of kind of frustrating drops, and they all seem to be happening early, and they all seem to bounce up in the air and end up in interceptions. Yet he kept saying, I got to play better, and kept firing, right? Like, that's leadership as well.
Yeah, and it's what might have been notable, I asked the zone guys after that was done, you know, kind of what jumps out at you, and Jason thought maybe the fact that he talked at length about Mahomes and how he's changed, and everything was off the field or leadership, that nothing really hit. He wasn't a different thrower of the ball, or the way he played was at least notable that he didn't go down that road. But I think that could just be the fact that he's been so consistently good from the outset that there really wouldn't have been that much to change, and that the leadership role that he took on quite early is the part where he's really grown the most.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt about it. Let's talk a little bit about who he's going to throw the ball to. Sky Moore, a guy the Chiefs have high hopes for. Wide receiver coach Joe Blamire said Moore has benefited from his surroundings.
It's helped having some other new faces in our room. And whereas some rookies might use it as an excuse, it's my first year in the NFL, this is a lot of stuff to learn, and they crutch on that. He's seen all the other guys come in. They're learning our offense for the first time, and there's no excuses for them. We expect the veteran guys who we brought in to know everything, and they're learning it as well. And so Sky has taken that approach, like, hey, if they're knowing everything and it's the first time they're hearing it, then I should too. And so just kind of being in that environment and taking that approach, that professional approach, where here's what's expected and it's not too much to handle, has been served him well so far.
Love hearing that.
It's good to hear. Yeah. I mean, you like all the other things, and we're talking about a guy who came from, you know, one of the mid-majors, so you'd be like, oh, is he up to speed? Well, he certainly plans on being up to speed.
Yeah, that's terrific. I loved hearing that.
Yeah, I did too. Sky Moore, my pick to lead the Chiefs receivers, statistically speaking. Taking a little bit of a flyer there, but I didn't want to be just the absolute suck-up that Curtis is. I wanted to be unique.
I have no problem sucking up.
Yeah, none. Dave Tobe talking about one of the draft picks, seventh rounder Isaiah Pacheco, running back. Tobe today said Pacheco's going to get first crack at the kick return spot.
We're going to give him every chance to be that guy. I mean, I just think he's got all the attributes, you know, to be a good kick returner, and he's gotten better and better at practice, and he's doing little things better, and he's catching the ball great. You know, and now we got to see what happens with live bullets. When guys are coming down there to take your head off, it's a little bit different, so. We'll see how he handles it.
He did some of that early in his career at Rutgers, and then they took him off. You know when they took him off?
I don't know exactly when they took him off. I know he doesn't have a lot, so he hasn't done it in a long time. Same thing goes with Sky. You know, we're going to put Sky back there on punt return, and he hasn't gotten a lot either, you know, in college. So there'll be a lot of firsts, you know, in his game, but it's all good. It's going to be fun.
Listen, everybody's got to, you know, get repetitions, right? They're all rookies are raw. But, you know, and they're just trying it, and that's what the preseason's for. If they both fumble and make a boob fest of it, okay, good. Let's cross them off when it comes to kick and punt returns. But, you know, a little bit of me says, if you wanted a kick returner, draft a guy who returned kicks.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you think he can return kicks, like maybe part of the deep dive, and listen, and this is unfair, so I'm going to back off this, because I'm sure if you ask Brett Veach, well, why didn't they have him return kicks? I guarantee you Brett Veach and his staff can answer that.
Right.
So the fact that Dave Tobe, like, and the coaching staff is part of the scouting process, but they're the very end of the scouting process. And Dave Tobe may be trying to back there because, you know, Brett Veach and his staff said, listen, you got to give him a go. Rutgers said they love him back there, but he was their only weapon on offense, so they just couldn't risk him on kick returns. But they always thought he'd be fantastic. And when he did it a couple times here and there in practice, he seemed to have good vision. Let's give him a look, right? I guarantee you that the scouting side knows a lot more about when he's like, I don't know really what happened. You know, I guarantee you the scouting side knows more. So don't read too much into that. I was going to say that, and I'd Like, I know the scouting department will have dotted every I, crossed every T as to what it is. But it is kind of interesting that he's a guy that didn't do that much, in hardly at all in college, and yet he's going to get the shot with the Chiefs. They need to have a big bounce back, let's be clear, on special teams. Because they, you know, if they're going to keep returning these kicks, they need to break one. Like, I get it that, like, oh, we're only starting at the 19 or we're starting at the 21, could have been at the 25. You can live with that when you have Patrick Mahomes. I know people are like, you got Patrick Mahomes, why don't you just take it to the 25 and move on? To which I'd be like, you got Patrick Mahomes, what the hell is 4 yards?
That's exactly the response, you know? I was thinking.
But that being said, like, you know, okay, we start 3 short, 4 short, you know, but you got to break some big ones. Like, well, now we're starting at their 42. Well, that was a touchdown. That was a freebie touchdown. And now with our offense, they're really having to come out of their game plan and go at it. I mean, you got to cash. If you're going to keep bringing it out, you got to cash sometimes. We'll see if they're able to do it. He just said a couple of the rookies going to get a look here in the preseason at it. Let's go to the defensive side of the ball. Rashad Fenton coming back from the shoulder, cleared to practice. DB coach Dave Merritt was asked what it meant to get Fenton back on the field.
To have him out there is big for us all. To see him go through the rehab and be able to have a chance to come back and be with his brothers on the field is big. And so the thing that we're going to do is take him through individual, and then he'll get a couple of the one-on-ones. And then after that, we'll continue to just matriculate him into all the other periods. And so it's great having him back, and he's been great in the classroom for us.
Matriculate.
I almost thought he was going to matriculate down the field. Like, you can't use the word matriculate in Kansas City as a member of the Chiefs without it perking up ears. Right? Come on, Lenny. Just keep matriculating that ball down the field. If anybody doesn't know what we're talking about, you're a youngster. Yeah. Great NFL Films line of Hank Stram urging on Len Dawson in the Super Bowl to keep matriculating the ball down the field.
I don't think you have to be an older person, because intern Rico heard it and looked up immediately.
Okay,
you know what that means.
That was going to be my next question, because I was not around for Hank Stram, but I know immediately what that means.
Yeah.
I was wondering about the interns, though, so I'm glad. Did Thunderlips, did you catch that? Matriculate and what that means for the Chiefs? I've heard Hank Stram say it, is what he says. So there we go.
Yeah.
Three, 4 for 4 over here.
But had he heard it before I just said it? That's the bigger question. Like, I did
he's quizzing him.
Yeah. He heard Hank Stram say it in a video.
Okay. All right, good. So it's lore, even for the young hip kids. Today, it's lore for them as well. More from Dave Barrett, the DB coach. Todd Lebo asking him about all the rookies they've got in that secondary.
Yeah, it's like Christmas. It's like Christmas. This is my 26th year in the league, and I've never been around a group where I call them the Fab Five, and most of them weren't even born then. I said, but you know, we drafted 5 guys, and I said, you guys need to understand that this group is very special. So to be able to have the guys to come in and have the camaraderie that they've had and be able to have the love for one another has been great. But it's like Christmas. I mean, you're working with the guys, you're trying to teach them new techniques. They're all sponges. So it's been wonderful.
A Fab Five of sponges. Trent McDuffie, corner. Brian Cook, safety. Joshua Williams, corner. Jalen Watson, corner. Nazi Johnson, safety. The Fab Five. It's like Christmas is really what it is.
Well, 2 things. One, he also went on later to really praise the leadership for the young guys from Cook. He's really cottoning to it. And he said that most of them weren't born then. None of them were born then. That was 30 years ago. I guarantee none of these guys were around for the Fab Five.
God, Fab Five, 30 years ago. Good Lord.
Scary, ain't it?
Yeah, I think about things that, like, when I was, you know, like Villanova winning the championship when I was in high school in 1985. And like, oh, what was happening 30 years before that? I don't know, something in 1955.
Yeah. It's very easy to lose a decade. Often things that I thought were 25 were actually 35 years ago. I'm at that point in my life where I've just lost 10 years.
I was looking at when we were playing There Can Be Only One earlier. I was looking at one of the players and I saw his age mid-20s, and I thought, oh, yeah, yeah, he's around my age. And then I see he's born in 99. I'm like, oh, my God, he's not my age at all.
Other NFL news, Jets right tackle Mekhi Becton more than likely will miss the entire season after a chip fracture in his right kneecap. Is he just too big to play, like 385 or whatever? Like, do you get to, it's like, listen, explosive people, when you get to that world's strongest man behemoth size, like, you're just physically too big to take the pounding.
Yeah, yeah, the body, bone is bone. Right, and muscle is sometimes it's just too much strength of one for the other part of the body to survive.
Do you remember Aaron Gibson, the offensive tackle for the Lions that played at Wisconsin, and he was very well known amongst college football because as a freshman at 380, they played him at tight end. You know, the way Wisconsin's always been a ground and pound team, at Barry Alvarez, with one of his big backs, it might even have been Ron Dane, for God's sake, would pound it, would bring him in, and they put an 80-something on him because they didn't want him to have to report every time, and they would just pound away. Anyway, he was like 390 pounds. He got drafted by the Lions, had virtually no career. Like, are we reaching maximum capacity for how big you can be and stay healthy?
Yes, I think that's probably the case. Yeah, Gibson, 6'6", 385. That was 20 years ago he was that big.
Yeah. Commanders have fired their D-line coach Sam Mills today, continuing to prove that they are just a model franchise. Starting with their jackass owner, and Ron Rivera, I think, is a good football coach, but this is not a good sign for the Commanders when you get into camp, and we got a difference of philosophy. Really? Maybe you should have figured that out before you set sail on the season. Wouldn't that have been like a hiring interview process? Like, what's your philosophy? Different than yours. I think we're going to go another direction. Like, yeah. Shouldn't that have been how that conversation went?
Did he say, I'll tell you later? Okay, well, get back to us on that. And then they just found out this week, oh, my God, that philosophy's terrible. We got to fire this guy.
Kareem Hunt requested a trade. Didn't get it. He sat out 2 days, and they're like, yeah, not happening. He's like, oh, okay. Well, I don't like getting fined, so I'm back. I want to get paid. Yeah. Roquan Smith of the Bears, their linebacker, said in a written statement that he has requested a trade after contract negotiations between himself and the organization reached an impasse, said the new regime just does not value him. He wants a trade. Like, Kevin Durant wants a trade. You know, quarterbacks can want a trade. You're a linebacker. Like, see Kareem Hunt. Know your place, young man. Just play well. If you think you're worth more than they're offering, get to free agency and go get paid.
And prove it.
Right? Linebackers are not of the world, are not of the stature in this world to request a trade.
No. 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 I think that statement stands on its own.
Rob Walton and his group of investors, that includes his daughter Carrie Walton Penner and his son-in-law Greg Penner, were officially approved as the new owners of the Broncos. Finally, some good news for the Walton family.
$4.65 billion.
Mm-hmm. Guys, we're $70 billion, they said.
I saw that makes
him self-made man too, by the way.
Richest richest owner in the NFL. Mm-hmm.
I did it all on his own. What did he do? He just didn't expire.
Yeah. Had a rich relative.
Yeah, had somebody who had a good plan and just rode the coattails. I'm sure he, he only started with a couple of billion, though. And look at what he's done.
Yeah, he worked his way from the 80th floor up.
Jameis Winston.
Why should we tax people like that, really? They start with almost nothing.
Don't go down that road.
You know.
We are having a nice little poke fun at the Waltons. Rich guys, and you got to make it about taxes.
See, I didn't make my job creator joke, and you couldn't resist.
At a Drovetta. At a Drovetta.
Yikes.
Just a joke too far, mm-hmm. That's what you are, just a joke too far. Jameis Winston's not going to play in the preseason. I'm choked up about this.
Yeah.
In the preseason game against the Texans on Saturday, sprained right foot. Jason Kelce, elbow surgery today, the center for the Philadelphia Eagles, and brother of Travis Kelce, a routine clean out.
Yep.
He decided to have the procedure after trying to work through some lingering discomfort. If it was routine, why didn't we take care of that, oh, I don't know, back in February?
Right, right. Timmy said that off. He said he had one of those and was back in fairly decent time.
But he played at a time that, you know, nobody cared about the well-being of the player.
Right. Especially a center.
Yeah, this is supposed to be, and Tim at that. Yeah. But this is supposed to be, you know, modern, civilized football.
Get out there and snap the ball. Shut up.
Marshawn Lynch was pulled over at 7:25 a.m. on the Las Vegas Strip after his car was said to be running into the curb. Blood alcohol. They took blood for a blood alcohol test. TMZ reporting this, that they will determine his blood alcohol content, but arrested for suspicion of drunk driving. This just the next day after coming to an agreement to be a social media content provider for the Seattle Seahawks?
Something along that line, yeah. It's an excellent hire.
Will he be good at that? Sometimes I think he's really funny. Sometimes I'm like, okay, I've seen the joke. Right? He's the grumpy guy. Right?
If Marshawn Lynch lives to be 70, and I'm still around for that, which would certainly be an upset, I'm still not sure people will completely understand who he is and what's going on with him. But he can be entertaining, but I can also see how something like that could go off the rails.
Let's take a break. Seth Kizer, we're going to be talking some Chiefs football with Seth Kizer next here in the program.
He's a pastor who likes the passing game, an attorney who enjoys play action more than class action. And he loves to watch Chiefs game tape for hours and hours and hours. He's Seth Kizer of The Athletic on the program.
We talk some Chiefs football this segment. You can still grab tickets worth Harley-Davidson, the spot to be. Brittany's got tickets, got a handful of pairs of tickets left. Get over there right now. She'll be happy to give you a pair of tickets to our Thursday night bash, the 100-year anniversary of WHB. We're going to celebrate at the Midland. Everybody who's anybody's going to be there, eat, drinks, and lots of fun. What are you waiting on? Get over there to Worth Harley-Davidson. Can't buy them, can only get them. At the ticket drops, one going on right now at Worth Harley-Davidson, I-29, just south of the airport, the biggest and baddest Harley-Davidson dealership in the Midwest. Brittany's there. Ask her for tickets. She'll be happy to give you a pair of tickets to the big event coming up on Thursday night at the Midland. Let's talk to our buddy Seth Kizer from The Athletic, of course, his chief in the North newsletter as well. Always a great read. He's brought to you by our friends at Twin Peaks. If you want a great happy hour, Twin Peaks is the spot for you. Check it out. Always 29-degree man-sized draft beer. Great setup for watching games if you want to watch some baseball. Very soon we'll have football back. It's time. And, of course, your fantasy football draft. No one hosts a better fantasy football party than the folks at Twin Peaks. You can stay cool under pressure with those 29-degree draft beers. Bites for the whole team, plus a $50 bonus card for the commish. That's right. If you're the commish, set it up at Twin Peaks. An additional $5 bonus card for every drafter there as well. Just visit TwinPeaksRestaurant.com/fantasy draft for more info. Let's talk to Seth Kizer. Seth, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing really, really well. How are you doing today?
Very good. Very excited. We got a big week here at Sports Radio 810 WHB as we got our big birthday bash for WHB, the WHB call letters coming up. So that's exciting. We have Chiefs training camp going on. That's exciting. And we have you breaking down film. What more could a Chiefs fan want, Seth?
It's a fantastic time to be a fan. I mean, this is the fun time of year. We are on the eve of brand new games and film to chart and snaps to review. It's one of my favorite things. I forget how much I love watching the game. And then when I finally get to, you know, you watch the 2021 stuff over and over and over and over, and it's finally something new. And so I'm really excited.
What are you most excited to watch? What are you looking forward to the most here in this first preseason game?
You know, for me, with preseason, it's all about trying to evaluate individuals more so than the team, because you can't really evaluate the team in preseason. And so for me, it's probably going to be, like, if I were going to be hyper-specific, Sky Moore's releases in a non-practice setting. I want to see if he is as good at getting open off the line of scrimmage in a game setting as he has been in practice, because there's just a lot of dominoes there if that's the case.
Yeah, there is, you know, they love him out of the backfield. Like, do we think, you know, the Deebo Samuel approach is one that obviously Deebo Samuel doesn't want, but is one that's prudent for the Chiefs to apply to Sky Moore?
I mean, it's such a successful system in terms of running the ball, and not just, you know, not just having a Deebo Samuel back there, because Debo's kind of a one of one, I think, but I mean, we'll see. But just their entire run scheme is something that should be emulated. And Andy Reid has never been shy about stealing things that work and incorporating them and making them his own into his system. So I think they should definitely try to incorporate some of this. I'm actually surprised that Sky Moore is the one you're seeing get those handoffs. I would have thought that if they were going to go that route, that it would either be Hardman or Juju Smith-Schuster, given the fact Hardman obviously has some experience running out of the backfield, has that incredible speed, has some pretty good instincts with the ball in his hand, and Smith-Schuster is a very, very tough yards-after-catch guy, but maybe they're trying to meet both in the middle because Sky is a little more explosive than Juju. Maybe, you know, he's a little more thick built than Hardman. So I doubt they'll go down that road the whole way, but it just makes sense to incorporate that in a few plays a game.
I mean, the reality is, though, that, you know, if you're going to carry the ball, you got to be able to run through some arms. And that's what Sky Moore's broken tackles was one of his real calling cards as a prospect coming out, was that he can do exactly that.
Right, he had a ton of yardage after contact. It was kind of interesting watching him. I viewed him as more of a guy who could make defenders miss and cause that contact to be very partial. And so, you know, a guy gets, you know, one half of one arm on you, that's the same yards after contact, whatever you get after that, as it would be if you just full on shake someone who had you dead to rights, which is an area Deebo Samuel really excels at. I mean, he excels at making people miss, too. And so maybe that's the big thing with them, is that ability to make that first guy miss is something he has, which is a similar skill set to getting a great release at the line, so it would make sense.
Yeah, is the reason he's not a first-round pick just pure straight-line speed?
I think you've got two things going on there. Maybe three things. One, you had a lot of good receivers in this draft. I reviewed, I think it was like, it ended up being 12 or 13 guys, and I really liked the film for a lot of them. Like, saw them as kind of borderline first-round guys. So that's one issue. The second issue is that he doesn't have, at least in terms of, like, something physical you'd look at, this defining trait. You know, you mentioned straight-line speed. He's not a complete burner down the field. He's not incredibly physically imposing. He's got huge hands, but, you know, he's not, you know, Drake London, right? And so the things that he does, they're more film-based. They're more, oh, great releases, gets in and out of his breaks well, he catches the ball well with his hands. Those things that are important, but they're more film-based. And then the problem with that, and I think this is where coaches second-guess themselves, and maybe they'll be right, maybe they'll be wrong, but they see him doing that against a lower level of college competition, and you're always making, you're taking a gamble there that what he's doing will translate at the next level with an even bigger jump than the other guys are seeing. So I think that's why he dropped to the second round, is it's just a little bit bigger gamble. And NFL teams, they hate gambling.
Seth Kizer's with us, his chief of the North newsletter. Great read if you are a Chiefs fan. We're talking about the Chiefs getting ready for their first preseason game. We heard Dave Merritt, the defensive backs coach for the Kansas City Chiefs, call having five rookies like Christmas. Right? And that they're like the Fab Five, which I get it. There's five of them, the alliteration. Are you as excited about the defensive backs, or is that a little bit of hyperbole?
I think that's going to be a little bit of hyperbole. I'm definitely excited about the guys that they drafted. A lot of good film there, including Watson, you know, who they didn't grab to the seventh round. I mean, there's a lot of good film there. And guys that showed that they can play. It's just it's tough for guys to come in and play well their first year in the league, and especially when they're surrounded by multiple rookies and they're playing in a system that seems like it's been kind of tough for the secondary to pick up the last few years. That makes me very hesitant. I certainly want it to be true because that would be a, just about one of the biggest developments that could possibly happen for the Chiefs would be if two or three or four of these rookies really catch on quickly. To me, I'm just holding on to hope that two of them can. If two of them can, like say, you know, the most obvious McDuffie and Cook, if those guys can catch on quick, that would be huge for the defense and signal a pretty successful draft, no matter what else happens.
Do you, like, I think part of what they did was, you know, they knew that with Tyreek Hill going, they wanted to go with more wide receivers that were real wide receivers and not guys that were there as much to cover kicks as they were to catch the football. And so to me, I think this is, the, you know, the bottom end of that is just Dave Tobian. Right. Let's get some guys who can cover some kicks and throw numbers at it. But part of it is because the D-backs are going to have to handle a lot of the special teams coverage units.
I think I could really see that happening pretty easily. I mean, the guys that they're currently having fighting for the final spots, the only one of them that's really thought of as like a big special teams guy would be Watson. I mean, that just that is definitely a route to go. If you think you're going to be going at the very least four deep with your receivers more often, then it only makes sense that you got to keep the other two guys a little healthier and not take maybe as many risks with them. And I do think throwing bodies at a problem, that's just good common sense in the NFL draft. I mean, everything in the draft is a bit of a crapshoot. And so it makes sense to throw as many bodies as possible at a problem position that no team has shown they can consistently get right, even in the first round.
Tell me, Isaiah? No, I'm second guessing myself. Pacheco's first name. Yeah, Isaiah. Isaiah Pacheco is becoming the new camp darling. We said by Dave Tobe today that he's going to get first crack at the kick returns. You've done the film study on him. You did the breakdown. I remember reading it when you did it. You know, yards per carry, not very good.
Right.
You know, tackle breaking, not very good. 40 time, spectacular. Couple of long runs that look really good. Yeah, that's impressive. What is Isaiah Pacheco?
You know, he does two things that, and this is kind of the point of the review, is that he does two things that can help guys get on the field quickly. He's got explosion, you know, so if he's got good blocking, and that was one problem in college, his offensive line wasn't particularly good, and he doesn't play like a guy who's going to pick through and create extra yardage in terms of as a tackle breaker or as a guy who kind of, you know, has this spectacular vision. But he's got explosion, and so if there's a crack there, he can get through it quickly. He accelerates fast, and if you really break those plays down, you can see how if just being one step faster than the next guy, it creates a world of difference in how the linebacker gets an angle or doesn't get an angle. And so that's explosion. That's a big deal, and it's something the Chiefs have lacked in the backfield recently. And explosion matters a lot more when you've got a really good offensive line because you don't need them to create the yardage, right? You just need them to run as fast as possible through the holes that are already there and have just a basic ability. The second thing he does well that I think is a reason why he could, in theory, see the field faster than some rookies, and I'm not sure I buy into the hype. We'll see how he looks in preseason, et cetera. But he pass blocked very well in college. And that's usually kind of the separator for rookie running backs. A lot of these guys, there's a lot of good running backs in the league as runners. They're really athletic. They see the field pretty well. But pass blocking is tough at the NFL level, and most rookies come in not very good at it or even having been asked to do it that much. They asked him to do it a lot in college, and he was very good at it. So that could, in theory, help him leapfrog problems that other rookies see. I mean, even Clyde the last couple of years, it's been hit and miss with pass pro. So those are things that could help him see the field, but that explosion, I'm guessing, is what really has them interested.
You're going to make me do it. I didn't want to do it because I brought it up against Tim Grenhardt, but it's a pet peeve of mine. You know, where have the big backs gone? Now, you don't have to be a big back to be a good pass protector, and being a bigger back doesn't guarantee you will be a good one. Larry Johnson sucked at it. Jamal Charles was great at it, and Larry Johnson had 30-plus pounds on Jamal Charles. But it just there is some physics to it. If you want somebody to pick up a 245-pound guy getting a dead run at your quarterback, maybe don't send the 5'7", 200-pound guy to do it. Right? Like, maybe – and I know – The colleges aren't, you know, the Christian Okoye's and Barry Words and, you know, those guys aren't nearly as plentiful and maybe are almost extinct. But, like, you know, try at least. I don't know. It's just one of my
– Sure. Well, and you know, they kind of – with Darrell Williams, they kind of – they found a guy who could legitimately – and this is what makes him, I think, a good third down back – is he legitimately can be a threat in the passing game because he's above average receiver, but he's also a good pass blocker and he's big. He's a big dude. He can take on a linebacker head to head. And so he's kind of a little bit more of an oddity. I think it's hard to find guys like that who also have, you know, the requisite speed and receiving chops, and you don't want to become predictable. It would be my best guess. But it definitely makes it harder. Like you said, when you're giving up 40 pounds to someone, technique can only go so far.
Yeah, 5'11", 2 1/4", Darrell Williams listed at. I wanted to look it up real quick. And that's certainly bigger than 200 pounds, and he was one of their bigger backs, and he was good at it. I agree with you. Tom Raffman was 240 pounds in the 80s and could catch the football, right? Like, they threw him the ball, and he could actually catch it. Jerome Bettis caught the ball at Notre Dame and played like a true fullback at Notre Dame. I don't know. Again, I'll get off my soapbox. It's one of my pet peeves about where the game has gone. Like, I don't understand why there isn't still a place for the bigger backs. On the kick return part, back to Pacheco, you know, the Chiefs have been great under Dave Tobit returning the kicks. Last year wasn't their best. Everybody can have a down year. Or is the kick return dead? Have the rules accomplished what they wanted in the Chiefs? It's a fool's errand to keep running the ball out from 8-9 yards deep.
I want to say yes because it feels like it is, because I know I get frustrated more often than I get excited. Every time they bring the ball out from, you know, even really from the end zone, unless it's like maybe just a yard deep or right on the line, I find myself very frustrated. Because it seems getting back to the 25 is really rare. So maybe, you know, then maybe they've done the math and they figured out that starting at the 17 as opposed to the 25, you know, 10 times, you know, over the course of 8 weeks is actually balanced out by the one big play you break there. Maybe it is. I don't know. Eric would know better than I would, something like that, you know. I'm not good with numbers. That's why I chose the field I did. But I don't necessarily like it. It feels like it's an unnecessary risk to injury, and it doesn't feel like it really moves the needle all that often. You know, I get Mecole Hardman in the 2019 playoffs, had that great kick return that kind of started to spark things, but I just don't know if you're getting that one every 20 times, and you know, all numbers approximate, I don't know if the juice is worth the squeeze there. So right. I'm kind of with you on that.
Not now, Davis, just to open the 15, you know, finally getting a playoff win in 2015 against the Texans with a kick return for a touchdown. I mean, they're big when you get them. Return touchdowns of any kind are giant and really tilt the win percentage your way. So I do understand that. I do get it. But it does seem like, you know, you have to cash. Like, I don't mind if you start at the 17, the 22, the 21, 28, 17, 19. That's all fine because I think you got Patrick Mahomes, so let's try to hit a home run. You know, some people say, you got Mahomes, why would you set him back? Because he's so good, it doesn't matter, right? But you got to hit the home run sometime. Otherwise, all you're doing is making it harder on yourself. And so I think, you know, and then Sky Moore is going to return punts. So let's see what they get. By the way, Eric Eager will tell you, build your roster for the guys to play offense and defense and punt the ball straight up in the air for a fair catch. Send somebody back who can really catch to fair catch it and take a knee in the end zone. He will tell you don't screw around with it. That's what the math will tell you. But we'll see what the Chiefs come firing at this time and whether or not they've got more to see. Are you of the belief that Ronald Jones is fighting for a roster spot?
I wasn't. I'm still kind of the opinion that all this kind of this Isaiah Pacheco hype / hope is going to kind of settle out, and it's going to end up being Clyde, and then it's going to end up being Jones. And then McKinnon. That makes the most sense to me from just how everything went last year. That makes the most sense to me. But I could be wrong here. I think if Pacheco were a guy to make the roster where they say, nope, he's too good, we can't practice squad him, we really think that he can contribute this year, I think Jones is the most sensible one to go because he is the most particularized of the group. in terms of he does not pass protect well. He does not. He's not a very good receiver. At least he hasn't been in his career. And so you're really hanging on to a guy that's a one or two down guy, which is fine when you really need that one guy who, okay, we need a guy with a little more burst. But if Pacheco is that guy, then it's kind of, you know, the old Office Space thing. You know, what is it you'd say it is you do here? Mm-hmm. And so if Pacheco makes it, I think Jones is out. But I have a hard time really believing that they'll go with a rookie like that.
Tell me, last subject, and we'll get to our final four. Do you believe that there's a tight end that could do a good job if Travis Kelce went down? You know, it's been one of the things I thought. We keep waiting on Andy Reid to go get that second tight end, and we've had all kinds of interesting little, you know, flyers at the second tight end. But do you believe that there's anyone who can actually scare anyone at tight end beyond Travis Kelce?
I think their best shot at it has been down with a hamstring for a while. I think Fortson, of everyone they've got on the roster, has shown, at least in terms of hands, contested catches, a few things like that, a little bit better athleticism, has shown the closest thing to being able to scare teams a bit. I know they like Noah Gray. I guess we'll see. Blake Bell is who he is. So the short answer is no, not really, unless Fortson gets healthy. And even then, that's kind of a wing and a prayer, because we're dealing with a very small sample size, even though he played well in that sample size.
Time for our final four. It's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. If you have a sprain, strain, or fracture, the University of Kansas Health System offers orthopedic walk-in care at 435 and Nolan Overland Park. They're open weekdays 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. I begin with this. What is the current temp where you are at?
Oh, man, it's a warm one today. It's 84.
84, wow, okay. The leading receiver, just check in on this. I know I've asked you before, but the leading wide receiver will be who? Where's your mindset now?
Juju Smith-Schuster.
Okay, and you don't see you coming off that at all?
I don't think so, no, barring Sky Moore lighting it up during preseason and then, like, the first couple weeks. This is going to be pretty set in stone for me, barring Sky Moore really showing something during those first couple weeks.
Do the Chiefs return a kick for a touchdown this year? Kickoff.
Kickoff? You know what? I think if it's Pacheco, I think he does house one, yes. He's got good speed.
Okay. And who's your personal camp, darling?
Oh, man. I think I'm going to be fairly I'm going to be kind of basic here because it's pretty much everyone right now feels like. Mine's Sky Moore. I really like the way that it looks like he's winning, not just the fact that he's having good days.
Yeah, I picked him to be the leading receiver. So, I'm a little more bold than you.
I like it.
That's what I'm getting at here, Seth. Seth, great stuff, man. We appreciate it. Love talking Chiefs football with you. We'll do it again soon.
Sounds good, man. Thanks for having me.
All right, you bet. Seth Kizer with us, Chief of the North Newsletter. Great read. Of course, when the Chiefs games roll around, or if it's for your fantasy league, Twin Peaks has got you covered. Great spot to watch you some Chiefs football or get your fantasy league together, TwinPeaksRestaurant.com. Still about 8 or 9 minutes, 10 minutes maybe, to grab you some tickets at Worth Harley-Davidson. I-29 just south of the airport. Ask Brittany. She's got a couple of pair of tickets for you. You can join the bash on Thursday. It's at Worth, I-29 just south of the airport.
We're almost done for the day, but there's just a few more things we'd like to share.
But there's still more.
Here's the kicker.
Here's the kicker of this whole thing.
On the program.
But first, a good sense into the hour answer. Four pitchers have led the league in saves while winning at least 10 games. I asked for any one of them.
I'll try. Sure. Raleigh Fingers.
Nope.
Bruce Sutter.
Nope.
Dan Quisenberry.
That's one of them.
Okay, quiz.
He was the most recent to do it in 1980.
Hoyt Wilhelm.
Nope.
Willie Hernandez.
Nope.
Oh, no, he was, as you said, 1980. Yep.
They all happened between 73 and 80.
Oh, who was the guy? Mike Marshall?
Mike Marshall did it twice. There are two okay. There are two others. Five
two others.
Total seasons, but four
Kent
guys.
Kent Tekulve?
Nope.
I'll take one more shot. Was it big time? Dave Rigetti?
Nope.
I'm out.
John Hiller, who for a long time had the league record in saves at 38, and Bill Campbell of the 1977 Red Sox. Campbell is the only player ever to lead the league in saves and lead his team in wins. He had 31 saves, 13 wins for the 77 Red Sox. He's 74 today.
Playing for a little Good Sense there, goodsensesubs.com. If you want to order it tonight, you can pick what time you want it. 30% more meat. They'll slice the cheese and meat right when you get there. Freshest sandwich you're going to find. They bake the bread fresh twice each day. You can smell it when you walk in the door. Smell those cookies, too. Grab you a cookie at Good Sense while you're there. Goodsensesubs.com. If you're part of the loyalty club, you will get 10% back. So don't sleep on it. Don't miss the opportunity. Found it right there in Lenexa, Kansas. That is your neighborhood Good Sense. Couple minutes still to grab some tickets to the big shindig on Thursday night. Brittany going to be packing up and headed home from Worth Harley-Davidson. Grab your tickets right now at Worth. I-29 just south of the airport. That's where you can get them. We leave you with this, the Kansas City Royals winners. Did you have something, Curtis? I'm sorry.
No. I'm good.
Oh, thought I heard it. I was
scratching my head.
That figures. Royals win 4-2 in the early game. Doubleheader, 6:30, I think, is the start for the second game. Vinny Pascantino, his fourth home run. Nick Prado, his third home run for the Royals. Prado, nice day at the plate. 3-for-4 with a run and a couple of RBIs for Prado. But maybe the biggest story, Michael Taylor, a couple of hits as well for the Royals. The biggest story, Brady Singer. Another outstanding game. 7 1/3, 5 hits, 1 run, no walks. 6 strikeouts, the one run given up via the solo home run. Barlow, Coleman, and Kwas combined to give up just one run over the last inning and 2/3 and get them out with a win. In fact, Singer had a couple of guys on, and the bullpen was able to get out of that. But great day again for Brady Singer.